millions of plays.
Oh, that's incredible. I lost a lot less than that, but the thing was growing, and all of a sudden they pulled the rug out from under me. Same thing with TikTok. But anyway, I forge onward, and I've got now I've gathered about 35 platforms that carry the show.
Oh, really? That's
Yep,
awesome.
and we should collaborate on that, because I've got RTMP, and I'm not a tech guy. I know you are. But I've got that going, and I've got these embeds that I can put into websites so the show could be live. I'm just trying to, like Johnny Appleseed, I'm just trying to spread it around.
Right, build it, get it out there. Absolutely. Where are you based?
Boston.
Okay, love Boston.
Yep, all my life. So, Jovan Hutton, by the way, this is Charles Moskowitz. Thanks for joining me, everyone. Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Jovan Hutton Pulitzer is my guest. He's an award-winning inventor. Let me just talk a little bit about some of the things he's done. Founded companies that have included seed investment rounds ranging from 1.6 million to over 250 million, with companies supported and funded by Dream It Ventures and Micro Ventures, to name a few. He's been licensed to more than 330 companies, ranging from early stage firms to Fortune 100 industry leaders, such as eBay, IBM, AOL, Cisco, Google, Walgreens, TiVo, and others. Jovan, I recall your involvement in the 2020 election, particularly in Arizona,
Yes, sir.
where you developed technologies that would indicate some of the, at least the tip of the iceberg in terms of the level of fraud that has gone into that election, and once again has reared its head in Arizona
It
and
has.
probably nationally, because nothing was done. Let's go right into the issue, because again, I want to urge, we're not talking about voter fraud here, in that people going and fraudulently voting. Not that that doesn't happen, but that's not the issue. That's a felony. The issue
Right.
is ballot fraud. The
Right.
issue is, and this exists at many different levels. I mean, it's not one thing. It's a lot of platforms by which that is performed. So, Jovan, talk a little bit about your work in this area.
Sure. Let's for folks to understand how this works, there's really two types. We always hear about voter fraud and even online, if you look at it, they'll write reports and say voter fraud is very minimal and it doesn't often occur. So let me explain that first. Voter fraud is where somebody, let's say, got a hold of their dead mother's ballot. They voted an extra vote and they got caught. That happened in Arizona. A good example in 2020, the Attorney General Brnovich out there found some lady that voted her mother's ballot because her mother died just before the election. She wanted to honor her mother, she said, to get her vote in. So she did it. They caught it. Now you have to look at that in ratio. That's one person in a voting universe of Maricopa of 2.5 million voters. That is technically voter fraud. And they're right. It's actually fairly small. Now the industry tricks you to keep you, us, focused on voter fraud. What we're really talking about is election fraud. Now, folks, that's federal racketeering. That is completely different. When you modify the ballots, when you take over elections, when you print counterfeit ballots or whatever the case may be, you are participating in federal racketeering. And that's why this is such a huge mess and in many ways a constitutional crisis, because the system doesn't want to deal with it. But the very first instance of mail order, or should say mail-in ballot fraud in the United States. Most people never know when was the first time it happened. Now, every newspaper in the country wrote about it because it was horrible to think of people counterfeiting ballots. Well, that was the second term of Abraham Lincoln. It's been around for a long time. And
Oh,
then when
sure.
you think, about institutionalized fraud, another one that happened was in 1948. LBJ was losing it. It's when he was running for the Senate. Right. He was just a big known Texan then.
Right.
He had lost. He was losing last waning hours of the election. His campaign manager, now think about this, his campaign manager hopped into a car, drove to West Texas, and magically found What? A box of ballots that forgot to be counted with 202 votes, exactly what LBJ needed to win the election. And he did. You can look it up. It's called Box 13. Now, what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is our system's porous. And once they learn to take advantage of it, they continue to take advantage of it. Our system is not designed to protect our vote. Our system is designed to be opportunistic, up for the highest bidder, to whoever is willing to do it. And as each party has engaged in it, both Republicans and Democrats, it just keeps on becoming a competition till finally you see, like it is now, the system breaks, it's a free-for-all, and it's who's willing to steal the most.
Well, the people that are more oriented towards stealing are the people who happen to be in power in any particular district, and that can be either Democrat or Republican.
That's right.
And to suggest that this doesn't happen is like suggesting that crime has disappeared. I mean, it's a, you know, elections are dealing with power and money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're obviously going to have a tendency toward corruption in any case like that. So obviously it happens. You talk about, you know, how Lyndon Johnson delivered the box of ballots. That was covered in Joseph Caro's books about Johnson. That's not even up for question. I think the same thing happened with Al Franken's election,
right,
in Minnesota. And it's nothing new. This is one small piece of this bigger puzzle, mm-hmm, in what has become very systemic and automatic and even international at this point. Other examples of, are the fact that we have people on the voter rolls who have either passed away or have moved out of state.
Right.
And in about 10 years ago, this organization with the acronym ERIC, E-R-I-C, was founded with seed money from George Soros and headed up by a radical left winger. And they were hired by something like 20 odd states, including some so-called red states,
right,
to basically go through the voter rolls and cull out people who were no longer either living or had moved out of state. Something, by the way, that statisticians do all the time when they work for companies. I mean, this is kind of the bread and butter of data analysis. And that this company, over a period of, I think it's 10 years, did nothing. They removed like a small number of people. And well, they obviously, excuse me?
It's a racket. It's a very sophisticated racket to take and give our lawmakers deniability. Is what it is, right?
Yes.
We pay these people in office to clean our voter rolls. It's part of their jobs. Well, this smart idea that came up during the Obama administration when they created it was, hey, that's too much work. You're not getting to it. Let's outsource it.
Mm-hmm.
What had actually happened is, yes, ERIC, Electronic Registration Information Center, is supposed to clean up the voter rolls and supposed to find new voters. In 2020, they magically found 12 million new Democrat voters. Imagine that. But mm-hmm. Here's how the racket goes. The state or the county can say, look, we've got somebody working on our voter rolls. We're doing our job. They outsource it to ERIC. ERIC's supposed to find voters that moved out of state, voters that dead. They generate a report and they send it back to the state and said, here's the stuff you need to get off the voter rolls. But the cleaning up by the county or the state is optional. And so ERIC's been out there operating in some states for 10 years, and maybe you can find one report, 1 month of reports out of 10 years of reports being monthly, and the county removes something. So what are they really doing? Here's what they're really doing. They are the underbelly arm identifying where the fungible fat is in the system. Where is that asset that nobody's going to look for that can be traded, meaning your vote, and how can they activate them and make them look real? That's really what ERIC's doing, is they are undoing our great republic because they know where the fat in the system is. They identify it, and our election systems and politicians take advantage of that.
And aren't they using this technology of like slight delay in order to then send out ballots that can then be cast by who knows who. And then they go back to the time, the present time, so that it almost disappears. It's sort of like when you deposit a check at your bank account, the bank takes a float time before they make the funds available.
Right.
And you know, it's kind of like they get a little extra interest on that. Isn't there something, there's some technology, I seem to recall seeing an article about this in the Gateway Pundit, where there's this this kind of central brain, this place is somewhere in upstate New York.
Right.
That's that all of these, this kind of delay information goes to, and then it gets distributed to the different precincts around the country. There was one precinct in Tarrant County, I believe, Texas, that had a problem with it. It was a Ferry County, I think, a very small place. They had a problem with it, and they canceled the contract. And all of a sudden, you know, NPR is marching in, everybody demonizing. What did they, you know, what was the problem? So they had to bring them back. Who is that group? Is that Eric or is it some other group?
Well, that's predominantly Eric. It's all based on Eric's work. Here's how it works.
Yeah.
Let's say you're petitioning your county because you want to clean up the voter rolls, and you petition, I want a good copy of the voter rolls. What we believe is they will send you a true and accurate Eric report, because see, Eric is the one that has the real information. So what we think is going on, Eric maintains a good list, and that's an acronym, Electronic Registration Information Center. They maintain a good list. They play this game with the county that the county's supposed to be getting rid of the culls, but the county's not. So mm-hmm. when you ask to audit, they'll send you a good Eric list, but that's not what the county uses. The county still uses their one list with all that fat on it. So they kind of drift you away from finding where all the fungibility is, because it's a clean list. And you're right. If they're ever forced to clean it up, there's a big delay. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. If you right now wanted to try to fight for your elections and clean up the list, and you think you have thousands and thousands of dead voters on it, if you make the mistake of obtaining that list any less than 90 days out from the election, there is a moratorium that freezes the voter rolls at 90 days out. Even if they're bad, they can't remove them. And so they play games with you. So let's say you're going to get a head start on it, and you're going to get 8 months out from the election. They will delay and delay and delay, and then finally kind of give it to you where you can do your work, but it's locked in by laws that say you can't change anything with the voter rolls in 90 days. This is horrible stuff. I'll give you an example, a true example in Maricopa. Mm-hmm. Maricopa is one of these unique counties that they've been mail-in ballots for a decade.
Right.
About 74% of their 2.5 million registered voting base is on what's called the PEVL, permanent early voting list. Means you don't have to have an excuse, you're on it. Mm-hmm. A very interesting fact of that, let me tell you how they clean their books. So they send out all these ballots in an election. And when one ballot comes back undeliverable, says no such person, no such address, moved, left no forward address, or deceased. Those are the duns. They come back. Mm-hmm. So that ballot hasn't been opened. The county has a responsibility to get back to that voter immediately, or at least within the week, and say, look, your ballot has been returned. What does the county do? The county sends a postcard mm-hmm. to the same exact address. So they send this stupid little postcard out to whatever already came back. The same postcard comes back. The county does nothing. They get to wait one more election. So they mail out another ballot again. Same thing happens. It comes back returned. They send out a postcard again. Now they got two times, not replied. And so here's what they do. They don't take you off the list. They move you to the inactive file. Now, what's the inactive file? The inactive file says from when that second ballot happens, they will move you over to an inactive voter file, and they will keep you there at least 2 full presidential general elections. That means you could go through a general election in a midterm. Then you've got 8 more years plus 2. You're on the roll 10 more years, even though they know you're bad. And ready for this? If all of a sudden a ballot comes in magically, anytime you're on that list of inactive voters, they're required to count it. In 2020 alone, 179,000 of these people who hadn't voted in a decade and have all those returns automatically popped up and voted in 2020. And they don't have to check, and boom, they voted, and there they are. They keep this fat on the books to rig the system.
Right. I mean, obviously, suddenly they're somehow voting. I mean, the old-fashioned way was described by Chris Matthews in his book, Hardball, where he talked about growing up in Philadelphia, one of the most corrupt, areas for voting. And that he remembers being in the voting place. He was always into politics. And after the doors closed, the corrupt clerks would go through the list and identify anybody that didn't vote, and they'd vote them.
That's exactly what they do.
Except
you need a time chaos. Like,
yeah, but this is in a way more systemic and more widespread. I think it's the late Bob Dole who said before he passed away, he goes, well, one thing will happen after I pass away is I can look down and find out who's voting for me.
There you go. It's very true. It's
sad. So you have here a really something that's become quite systemic in that there are hundreds of thousands of names in the voting rolls, probably of most, if not all states, that are not voters.
20 million.
20 million.
It's between 20 and 21 million we've identified across the United States that should be gone and wiped out, and they won't do it.
And we have records of them voting, for example, in the 2020 and 2022 election.
Right.
Those votes should be immediately disqualified.
You're right. But see, we have
more investigated or something.
Well, here's the complication with this. In the United States, we vote by what's called the secret ballot, meaning when that mail-in ballot comes in, your name is separated from your ballot. So the time they open that envelope and take out your ballot, the ballot goes one way, the envelope goes the other way. This is on purpose. Because why? When they find bad voters, let's say they found thousands. We found 7,825 dead voters who voted in Maricopa. But here's the catch. You can identify them, but they have no record of how they voted. See, they separate it from the file. So they can go, uh-oh, but we don't know who they voted for, so where do we take the vote away from? That's how bad this is.
Yeah, and I think that it was in Michigan where the corrupt and rather attractive-looking Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, who received funds from Soros and from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the state was sued by a citizens group to have these names removed. They identified about 100,000 at least, and they won their case, but she ignored it anyways.
Right.
We also put in place laws that superseded the state legislature's standards of signature ballots and ignored those laws and just said, if somebody scribbles, you can count that as a vote. And that was thrown out by a judge 6 months after the election. It was too late. And, this gets to another aspect of what happened in 2020, which was that under the guise of the so-called emergency around the pandemic, you had state judges, you had unelected election committees, and you had others and secretaries of state, this whole group of them put in by a project run by George Soros, like Jocelyn Benson and Raffensperger and other really rotten, corrupt people. They were basically writing laws as they saw fit. Completely unconstitutional. Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution says that only state legislators hold the plenary power to make election laws, no one else. So and Pennsylvania is another really bad example. And even here in Massachusetts, which is actually pretty conservative when it comes to voting, I mean, you have to really show proof when you request an absentee ballot in this state.
Right.
You have to have a signature, you have a penalty of prison, automatically. I mean, it's pretty tough. Of course, that used to be a big cause, by the way, for liberals, but putting that aside, even in this state, the governor, Charlie Baker, a really kind of a rhino Republican, he participated in what Molly Ball from the Time magazine called the unprecedentedly largest mailing in world history. Millions and millions of ballots, unsolicited, unrequested, would just, it was like a mail order thing. It was like, you know, the old days when, you know, you'd get like a pitch in the mail, you get your
book screen.
You get junk in the mail. It's like junk mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it arrived in all kinds of weird places. In California, the University of California of Santa Barbara, which was empty because of the pandemic, cast 3,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They mailed them there. I mean, there are examples all over the country, which reminds me, getting back to the original thing we're talking about, which is the voting people's names. Thousands of people showed up at the polls, in particularly Phoenix and Pittsburgh, on election day, and they were told, oh, sorry, you already voted.
That's right.
Now, this happened this past election right here in Massachusetts. There were reports, I think, that Maura Healey, she won the election fair and square, but nevertheless, she was nervous in the beginning. And all of a sudden, Republicans were told, oh, sorry, you already voted. Now, the question there is, first of all, they didn't. So they were told to fill out a provisional ballot, which ends up in this strange box somewhere and right. goes to some central location, which right. is off limits, where it's allegedly counted. But the other question that begs an answer is, who voted for them and how? There's no record of it.
That was one of the biggest rigs in 2020. Six states, six counties all had the same issues. I'll give you Maricopa's numbers. Maricopa before, remember I told you that they've been mail-in ballots for more than a decade. The actual rate of getting a ballot in where somebody came in to vote on election day and it said, wait, we already got your ballot. Sorry. And they'll give you a provisional. You vote the provisional, so you have the illusion of voting. And then they say they're going to check it out. They don't. They just throw your vote away and don't count it. Well, mm-hmm. that was about 0.25%. In 2020, the average of the number of people that walked in and they're given a provisional because they were told that, sorry, we mailed you a mail-in ballot and it has already come back voted, 16.67%. Some precincts, 30, 40, and 50%. You don't have the ability to challenge it. You don't have the ability to say, wait a minute, this is crap. They take that ballot coming in. It's all horrible. I'll give you a few other examples of how they abuse this.
Yeah.
Maricopa has 2.5 million registered voters. The state said they sent out about 2.5 million ballots. The ballot printer for Maricopa printed 4,089,000. Why? The next thing is, you're not supposed to forward a mail-in ballot. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you have addresses that when you go back and do Canvas and check, 2,000 plus people registered at one address. Mm-hmm. Now, this one address had two new unique things about it. Remember, you're not supposed to forward mail-in ballots. Two unique things. It was an empty field, and there was no mail receptacle. The post person allegedly said, well, I dropped the ballots off six blocks down the road. This place takes them. Nobody challenged it, meaning the GOP didn't deal with it. The Dems didn't do it. This is wicked stuff, folks. You have a house where somebody's lived there for 30 years, her and her husband, and have for 20 years been getting half a dozen ballots. In 2020, that one house got 35 ballots.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two of them there that vote. Somebody's collecting these. They're paying bounties on the streets for them. They have a price on the street. It's like drug. Turn one of these things in, you can get a $50 gift card. Some of them have a $1,000 bounty. And our post people are participating in this. They know where the fat is.
I want to get to that in a minute because, you know, the ballots are sent to like buildings where you have like a lobby.
Right.
You know, and they could just drop off anything in there, throw it in. I mean, I've lived in a building like that where, you know, you just have mail tossed on the floor. If it doesn't have any particular name, and somebody obviously knows it's getting there because they're picking them up.
That's right. They're picking them up.
Particularly a big problem in Atlanta where you had a homeless shelter inundated with ballots. I think that, you know, Stacey Abrams' organization was involved with that. So this is another piece of this puzzle. The other piece, of course, is the drop boxes. Now, Dinesh D'Souza did the movie 2000 Mules.
Right.
Where he shows with geo-tracking, which is now used by the FBI, that and some video, more came out later, people pulling up to the drop boxes and stuffing the box. It's just no different than ballot stuffing. you're only allowed by law to put one ballot in the drop box, and you have to either be the person who is voting or a specific person that you delegate to vote for you because right. you're incapacitated. And, you know, there's video after video, particularly in this in the suspect states. And D'Souza shows this on the national map, people stuffing these ballot boxes. So the ballot box is a new thing. And the justification is, oh, this opens up more opportunity. And, you know, fine. Why not have a camera? Why not treat them like an ATM machine where you have to put in a little code? Nothing wrong with the drop box. Just there has to, there's nothing. I mean, in fact, I think that in was it Maricopa or some other county, they're actually threatening people with lawsuits if they showed up to just monitor them.
Just to watch them, yes.
So
it that's, is a, it's a crooked way to do it because it takes it outside of the best chain of custody. The best chain of custody, if you're going to do mail-in ballots, is you want it going through the post office because you want that audit feature of postage out, postage in, and coming back in the right way. But one of the ways for money to swing elections, got into our elections like Zuckerbucks, was to give money out to nonprofits, a nonprofit saying we'll help people vote. And they set up these drop box scenarios. The drop box scenarios, they say it just helps more people vote. Well, you have voting centers all over the place. What they need is the disbursement not watched. And that is why it's not just the fact that Denise did a wonderful job and with True the Vote of monitoring the boxes. Even the media said it was crap, it didn't work. But there is no reason that you have hundreds of people in one market that go on a regular route and actually stop at designated places picking up ballots, going to an average of 30 drop boxes and making a stop at each drop box and doing this every day in a row for several weeks.
And that's exactly the evidence. There's evidence of that. I mean, so D'Souza has it. Other people have it where you know, you see them coming back over and over and over. And, you know, there was the ballot harvesting, which was particularly big in Wisconsin.
Right.
People, you know, you talk about Zuckerberg wrote a check and his wife wrote a check for $420 million, almost a half a billion dollars. You know, it's interesting how silent the left is about that now. I remember back when I had my left-wing co-host, this was like about 5 years, 6 years ago, every day they're bellowing about, you know, corporate money in politics and, you know, the Citizens United decision. They were having protests. Now you don't hear a peep because Zuckerberg basically greased a few palms with $420 million, giving it to these two phony turf front groups that basically hired activists to go out and work the polls, work the counting rooms, go to nursing homes, gathering signatures and gathering ballots and filling them out for people who had dementia,
right,
and then stuffing them into the box.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, we can sit here and complain about this. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Sean Hannity, but he did make a comment I thought was interesting, and that he said, hey, this is how the game is played. We're going to have to play it. He didn't say do that, but he said, we're going to have to do some of these things. We can't just sit around and be all good government. If they're going to do this, we have to do it. I don't know if
I heard that. I have my own issues with Sean Hannity. He's a great American and supposedly a patriot, but I think he's misguided in a lot of ways. But let me tell you my take on that, because it's very interesting when you bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Hannity and other people have said, look, if the left does ballot harvesting, we need to do ballot harvesting.
Yeah.
Let me tell you my take on that.
Okay.
The left does not get in trouble for ballot harvesting, even in the states where it goes wrong. But I guarantee you, mark my word, if the Republicans get into it and they start harvesting ballots, there are going to be sleepers in all the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And when it's done, they're going to turn those Republicans in. And that will be the time that the Democrats enforce it and will throw that Republican under the jail to use as an example. I think it's a bad booby trap waiting to happen. And we have to fight differently by getting out and getting people to vote. But this ballot harvesting stuff, say, well, if they do it, we can do it. I'm not for it.
No, I'm with you on that. It would look like the D.C. Gitmo after the Fed's erection.
Absolutely. They'll set us up. They'll set us up.
Yeah, they're being tortured and they're being you know, held against, you know, without charges 2 years later in this country of ours. So, yes, I mean, I would tend to agree with that. The issue of electronic voting, you know, Mike Lindell has done a great job of trying to expose this. This used to be a big cause for the left. My own Senator Elizabeth Warren ran on this years ago and said, we have to change electronic voting. It's rigged, she said. We have to stop it. Vice President Kamala Harris, when she was a senator from California, she said, I've witnessed voter fraud, witnessed the machine being tampered with. I've right. witnessed it online. I've seen this with my own eyes, she says. Klobuchar, long list of others. I remember Tom Hartman, left-wing talk show host, month after month after month, he's talking about the electronic machines controlled by Republican corporate interests. Now, all of a sudden, nothing. The point is that it's an issue. Michael Savage actually did a very interesting program a few weeks back where he didn't reveal his sources, but it's quite plausible what he presented, which was that the fraud being done with these machines is so subtle that most people, including well-meaning people, couldn't possibly detect it. It has to do with the manipulation of algorithms so that certain people, certain results occur based upon past results. It has to do with the setting up of phony rooms where votes go in and they get counted and then the room disappears. And there's other very sophisticated methodologies being used. Now, I'm not naming any particular company that's doing it because we know that they're suing everybody.
Right.
But what data do you have on that, Jovan?
I think predominantly, election workers that work in elections across the United States are doing their patriotic duty mm-hmm. to try to serve this nation. Now, it is lopsided in the fact that it's probably in reality 70% Democrat people working these and 30% true conservatives and Republicans.
Right.
Now, that still allows them to say bipartisan. It can be one out of 100. If they've got a token Republican in there, they're bipartisan. You think it's rules that it has to be equal, and it's not. Now, I think two things happen. I think when you have somebody like Donald J. Trump that came in and won, that America embraced, got off your butt, you voted, right? Because mm-hmm. the left's always going to vote when the doors open, right? They say the right goes to church every time the door opens. The left goes to vote. It's their church every time the doors open. And right. So what happens is you put Donald J. Trump in. With all the media telling you orange man bad and hate and racism, people get inflamed. And people in the system will literally know they can fudge a little bit. Well, I can run these ballots through double. Oh, well, this one wasn't marked right. I'll just change this one. Or this one was blank. I'll do this. And therefore, at a low level, several people across all precincts did a few things. But then you had the system do bad things. You had the systems going out, collecting ballots, harvesting ballots, voting them, sealing them, dropping them in drop boxes. And so what we saw in 2020 was the exaggerated effect of the system basically saying orange man bad. And it is that exaggeration that allowed it to break wide open and we can see it. But I think it does not take people at the precinct level. It doesn't even take people at the Board of Supervisors level. If you want to rig this, there's so many ways to do it that it can be done right under people's noses. It'll never be detected and never be caught because our system doesn't account for it, period. It's easily done. But you now notice when you go to the exaggerated mode and it is a decided, absolute war to overcome what the public votes, you need two things. You need what's called a chaos item, and you need something to give extra time. So you need a chaos hack, broken water pipe, Sharpie overages. Oh, the scanners aren't working. But then you have to combine it with extra time. And you saw this like in the midterms with Carrie Lake. We need all these times to count the ballots. Let me share some light on with that with
yeah,
you.
Please.
If you were to look at Maricopa in 2020, they said this is going to be the biggest turnout ever. We're not going to be able to count all the ballots. We're going to need 10 extra days to count ballots. Mm-hmm. So let's just do that one thing, 10 extra days to count ballots. So on November 3rd, the election was over. They're going to be able to go to the 14th, technically counting ballots. As we head into the election in Maricopa, which has voting month, not election day, you get to vote for early voting a month out. When they scan those envelopes for signature check in Maricopa, which the balloteer does, the people that print the ballots, they really know how you voted because they have your history. So they're getting actionable intelligence the entire time, how many Republican ballots are coming in. So they now kind of know where this stands as they head into the election. So the wild card is election day. That's why Donald J. Trump got in. That's why the chaos has to happen on election day. So they need a time hack. Now, what they did back then in those 10 extra days, if you look backwards, they were doing about 149,000 ballots a day were being scanned in the machines, counting them. Mm-hmm. You get to election day in 2020, they did run through the next day about 140,000 ballots. But then in the other 9 days, it was almost equally divided between nothing was scanned in or anywhere from 2,000 to 7,000 ballots were scanned in. So what were they doing in those extra days? And that's where they need the time chaos hack. They need something to suspend the election day vote. So in 2020, the way they did it was Sharpies. We're never supposed to vote with Sharpies because it bleeds through. Well, they made sure everybody voted with Sharpies. That's all they issued. But see, it's not about changing your vote with a Sharpie. It's only about confusing the machines. Because if the machine can't make a decision, it has to wait for the human to tell it what to do. So 126,000 ballots in Maricopa came in that were compromised by Sharpies, wrong paper and then the Sharpie. Those 126,000 ballots, just those, had an extra 2.1 million visible votes on them that the machines could read. These machines know, I got votes all over this thing. Tell me what's up. Well, what that does is it suspends those 126,000 up here. So now they know everything that came in mail. They know everybody that came in on election day. They technically know what this vote is. They're just not going to let it come down yet. So what are they doing in those extra days? Claiming they got to work on the adjudications. They're sticking ballots in underneath, and then they bring these down slowly. And that's why we get that little flat line that looks like it was a foot race. Now, right. In 2022 for Kerry Lake, they did the same thing, but instead of using Sharpies because they knew we caught them, they just made certain machines not read them. Well, if it doesn't read it and you drop it in box number 3, it's just like voting in the mail. You're trusting them to scan it. What did they do? They said, oh, it's going to take us too long to count. And then they had all these in box number 3. They just kind of march them along over those days and do it together. The numbers in Kerry Lake, they were scanning 550 batches a day. A batch is about 200. They were scanning 550 batches of ballots a day leading into the election day. When they said they needed all the time because the crush of the ballots, it dropped to 50 batches, 1/10. Oh, what were they doing in all those extra days?
And in the case of Kerry Lake, I mean, according to the testimony at the trial, the Runbeck Printing Company, which is heavily Democratic and which is, yes, you know, very involved in the Democratic candidates, they printed the PDF for the ballot a slight amount smaller than the paper.
Yes and no. Let me just correct right there. It wasn't Runbeck. So let me correct this.
Thank you.
There's two types of ballots that are official in the election. There is Runbeck, which is the official ballot printer. Runbeck prints the early votes. That's the stuff that gets mailed out, okay, and has to be mailed in. Now, if you decide not to mail your ballot for whatever reason and you want to vote on election day, you bring in your mail ballot, they cancel it, and then they have printers in the facilities, in the vote centers, which are called ballot on demand machines. Those machines print you a brand new ballot. Mm-hmm. Now, it is a useful tracking mechanism because the Runbeck ballot is in color. So you know when you see color on it, that's original ballot. They do this as a sorting mechanism. So if you walk in or vote on election day or replace it, it comes out as black and white. Those machines did an interesting trick and then took the ballot style, the ballot format. And it was those machines that printed a 19-inch version on a 20-inch paper. And that's what can confuse the machines. And that's how it happened. But it was the ballot on demand machines that did it, which we told them in 2020. We told them every one of those machines that were broken and out of calibration, they have never been serviced. They haven't been serviced in probably 6 years. And they ignored
it. This wasn't like a deliberate thing where they actually shrank the PDF so that the machine couldn't read the ballot.
No, it is deliberate. Let me tell you, and I'll, okay. I'm just getting a little technical here. We in 2020, we found out that the system officially did not count a single election day vote in 2020, not a one. Mm-hmm. And the way we count, we found it is we found they had a ballot when we got to the audit. Now, if that ballot went into the machine, the moment it goes into the machine, it creates a digital copy of the ballot. That is your cast vote record one. It's called the pre-image. And then anything that happens in between, they make a second image, which is called a post image, cast vote record post. And then it has another version, which is called a splog. So you're looking at four versions of it. Mm-hmm. Uniquely in Maricopa, what we caught is we had a original ballot, but there was no pre-image. We had post images, but we had no pre-images. So how did you get a post image if there were no pre-images of the ballots ever going in? And they said, well, we accidentally deleted them all. Well, no, here's what happened. They mm-hmm. they just ran the election how they wanted to run it. And here's how we know it. They basically, NBC, ABC, CBS started talking about the election. It was going to be about 2.8 million votes and Biden was going to win. They probably started talking about that on the 8th of November. And so there's all this controversy going on. When we get to the 20th of November, the Doug Ducey and the county came out, Board of Supervisors said Joe Biden won. It was 2,089,561 votes. Now, here's the catch. The moment that number started floating, when they said they needed extra days to vote, when we did the audit and looked at how they were counting, they still hadn't run in 240,000 ballots. So how do you get a number of 2,089,561 when you haven't run in a quarter of a million ballots? Then we get to the 30th. When we get to the 30th, Ducey, the governor, Katie Hobbs, they certified the election because they have to do it on the 30th for the Electoral College. They certified 2,089,561. But here's the catch. As we look at their manual records during the audit, number one, that 2,089,561 never existed at any time in the election. And ironically, their own manual records show that they ran in basically 120,000 ballots December 8th and 9th. That's the moment that we're supposed to be certifying the electorate. That's when President yeah. Trump was ringing Ducey, say, don't certify this. The ballots didn't exist. So what did they do? Now it all comes back full circle. We found out, why do we have a ballot here? No ballot image, but then we have an after. It's because that's what they ran in December 8th and 9th. They made them all up. You know what's also unique about those that they ran December 8th and 9th? When we go into the system and look at them, every one of them is slightly different, enlarged, and the date timestamp header is cut off. They had to go in and manipulate every file so we couldn't see the actual day it was run in. More of the story, they picked 2,089,561 right out of their hoo-hoo, and they stuck to that number and managed to it.
These are serious felonies, very yes. serious crimes.
Yes.
We're not necessarily naming names here, but there are a lot of players that were involved, and it's very shocking that the people that were behind this, starting with Adam Mishkin of Fox News, who declared Arizona for Biden before the polls closed.
And yeah, he had no basis to do that. I can show you by day.
He couldn't have made that decision. This is what Dan Rather tried to do in 2020. I mean, that's old politics. Use your national platform. Oh, well, Florida went for Gore. There was right. never any evidence of that. And so then the next day, oh, I made a mistake. You know, the point is the media declared Biden the winner.
That's right.
Across the board. And then you had the facts on the ground, and anybody that dispute that is seen as a, quote, election denier.
Right.
Unquote, which is almost like kind of a communist term.
Well, it's actually interesting. No. I actually found out when I did soul searching, I am an election denier. You know why? I completely deny the fact that a real election was run.
Yeah, well,
it wasn't. And that's, I can embrace it. It was not run by the rules or the laws. I am an election denier.
And this is the, as am I, this is the American way. We question how things were run. And of course, the big election deniers were the people who cooked up that cockamamie conspiracy theory that Putin, you know, colluded with Trump to steal the 2016 election. They had no problem with that theory. But putting that aside, you had the Arizona forensic audit. Mm-hmm. I was watching it very closely. I think the whole world was watching it.
Yes, they were.
Cyber ninjas were brought in. It was authorized by and paid for by the Arizona state legislature. It is.
I need to correct that. Let me give you the backwards. There's okay. just a little bit misunderstanding. It was 100% authorized by the Arizona Senate.
The Senate.
That's number one. It has to be. The House has to recommend it. The Senate has to approve it. So it was 100% authorized by the Senate. This was a state sanctioned audit. Next thing. When you saw all the colors on the floor and you saw the people in colors and you saw, that's actually my process. I designed that so we could tell who handled the ballots. Everybody right. was saying it looks like Power Rangers. No, it's so I know at any moment who's handling the ballots. There were actually three of us involved. There was Doug Logan, who's Cyber Ninjas. Then there was Ben Cotton, and then myself, the forensics, that's the camera. It was all authorized, but here's the deal. The Senate said they would pay $150,000, which they didn't pay. There was not a dime of taxpayer money at all contributed or used to do the Arizona audit. It was high net worth individuals. Patrick Byrne spent millions and millions to get it done. He stepped up to get it done. There were about $1.2 million, $1.3 million of donations from individual stuff. And then a lot of us just ate it. It cost me $1 million plus to do what I do, just to make sure we could get out the results. And so there's a lot of misconception about it. And they don't realize we actually counted the ballots four different times. And you know, we had all kinds of stops and starts and death threats and having to move out of the facility and having to get armed security for everybody.
Right.
It was a nightmare for that standpoint, but it was monumental. It was the largest single election audit ever in the history of the United States and certainly in the history of presidential elections. We literally inspected. I'm one of very few individuals that's actually looked at all 2 million ballots. We literally looked at, inspected 189 million ovals and their variations in it. It was a very sophisticated operation that the left set out to bash from the beginning. But I just wanted to correct, there was no government money in it. However, the GOP did raise $400 million in the name of election integrity. We'll fix this. Donald J. Trump, this election was stolen. And for the Arizona audit, they actually gave us the finger.
Oh, they spent it all on tchotchkes, as we find out.
Yes, they did nothing. They didn't even put it in.
No, we find out from Ronna McDaniel, this report in this, I forget the paper, but they're spending it all on like, you know, sports tickets and and plane ticket, you know, trips. Anyway, the point is that the audit, the end result of the audit was sensational and the documentation was powerful. The whole thing was videoed every second of it.
Every second of it.
Completely transparent. There has never been a better audit in history.
Not at
all.
What
happened? Why did it all this? Why did the left get away with saying that this had proven that the election was not stolen? Because
I have a lot of issues with that. So I'll give you the underbelly, and it's a horrible underbelly. And if you don't want to hear the truth, cover your ears now.
Let's go.
Number one. The enemy in all of this, you would think it's the left. It's not. The right does not want answers. I hate to say that. There was so much sabotage from the inside, from the right. The detractors were the right. The detractors were the GOP. The roadblocks were the GOP. They're getting these numbers in real time. Literally in Arizona, they inserted rhinos into the process that kind of popped up out of nowhere. Former lawmakers, oh, I'm just helping. And those former lawmakers had a goal of making sure not find anything. So when you saw somebody like Ken Bennett, who reran this year out of nowhere and won, when he comes out and sits and testify, and I don't know why he was testifying. Well, the most important finding was that there the election was counted fairly properly and Joe Biden won. Well, though that was not the most important finding, and that wasn't the finding at all. That was all manipulated. There were over 100,000 ballots that they said were cast that are missing. They did not let that come out. Mm-hmm. There were all kinds of dead voters, all kinds of irregularities, all kinds of bogus. There were counterfeit ballots, 11,000 of them, every precinct. There were bogus voters inserted, ballots that were run completely out of the system and missing, ballots that showed up out of nowhere, zero chain of custody. Everybody, you got 2,000 election workers all signing documents of chain of custody. A chain of custody documents, one paper says, here's where the ballots come from. You got five people signing it. All of them basically unanimously sign on all the early voting. When you get to election day, all that paperwork is blank. They, if they went to a court of law in 2020, by the way, it was duplicated in 2022, the state itself, the county itself, cannot sit in a court and prove, they cannot prove those ballots came from this election. But here's the issue is, this has been going on so long that these cowards basically realized they had a constitutional crisis on their hand. They realized we caught it, we pointed it out, here it is, and they weren't willing to deal with it. Why? Because they were afraid of the media calling them conspiracy theorists. At the same time, the GOP is threatening them to stop it. I'll give you an example. One of the operatives that was put in, when the costs are running fairly high because we're trying to get it done, they offered, this Rhino operative offered Doug Logan $2 million towards the cost of the audit if they wouldn't use my information. That was the hook. Now, Doug who went bankrupt, Doug says, hell no, I'm not doing it. But that's how dirty it is. The GOP offered millions if you just won't use it. They made promises. They made backdoor deals. And it's for two reasons. They're in power to take money out of the system. They don't want it. They knew they would be, you know, washed out with the bathwater, just like the liberals. But the bottom line is it's all a game. But then it also would call into question a constitutional crisis. Here's what we really discovered. Let me give you an example. When they found out they can, and I'm using this for a country. Now, I'll just use Chicago because it's the worst. When they found out that they could insert a fake voter and they realized they could do that and it became institutionalized, you start finding some interesting things. I can go to almost any city in the United States. You can go down to the building permits where they're building neighborhoods, apartments, or skyscrapers. The moment they provision addresses for those, which is the first thing they do when mm-hmm. it's plotting the community, you know what appears the next day? Voters registered at their address, and they haven't even broke ground.
Yeah.
Now, what they'll do is it'll probably take 2 to 3 years to build out that address. They'll have that voter in those addresses. They pluck them in. Now, they've aged them for 3 years. Now, once people start really doing in the address, they just move them to a different address. You know what we really found? It's no longer just about fake voters. A lot of those bad addresses have something in common. They got COVID relief checks. And they were cashed. Yeah. Where's that money going? We're talking tens of thousands in any, even just the city municipality. Tens of thousands of COVID relief checks and stuff to phantom people. Somebody's cashing those. They are bleeding our system dry. And there's so much payola and stuff like that going on. That's why they don't want it looked into.
Yeah. I mean, the corruption and the money is on all sides. And
all sides. There is not a party that's innocent.
No, no. And it reached right up to the top. Of course, we know that Bill Barr really was obstructing any kind of research that President Trump asked for on the election. And he took Christopher Krebs' data, who was the head of cybersecurity,
right,
and had no information and just declared it the cleanest election ever.
Well, you have to understand that there's two smoke and mirror words in there that they use that I always encourage people to understand. When Krebs came out and said this was the safe, most safe and secure election in American history, here's what he was really saying. They planned Russia, not to get Donald J. Trump out. It had nothing to do with Trump. Remember when Trump said, they're not after me, they're after you. The whole reason for Russia was to put all of the security agencies on notice. Everybody used that false narrative, which allowed them to put a backdoor hook into our elections to monitor every single precinct in the United States of America, which they did. And this is why we did not get the routers and Splunk logs in Maricopa. Remember that fiasco?
They refused to release all of that. So you never actually got to see the inside. That's right,
because we could prove our own government sat on our servers. And our this own is, government and, was the 30,000 incursions in it.
Well, this is what I was talking about with the, you're refreshing my memory here, with that office in upstate New York, that it was set up by the Department of Homeland Security to monitor machines because of the alleged Russia interference.
There you go. So that's why they said the most secure ever. What he was saying, they had thousands of federal agents, unauthorized federal agents and operatives inside separate election centers, which had data ports watching everything. That's what they were really saying. So you'll understand this way. Let's talk about Barr. When Barr came out, we expected him to do something. We didn't know he was a coward yet, right? But when he said, he came out and he says, we've, in looking at a special prosecutor, we've decided that there is just enough, not there's not enough evidence to lead us to believe that there was fraud that would materially change the outcome of the election. You remember that widespread material? Oh, yeah. Let me tell you how this works.
That's what all the courts said too.
Right. Well, here's how it works. You got to understand it's written into law, and you've got to, it's all word sausage, folks. If you and I got together, right? And in Boston, and you and I found, say our candidate lost by 100,000, we know it was rigged. And you and I personally got together and we found 95,000 dead people's illegals, Russian, bad envelope, you name it. And we found that. And we go over to the attorney general and we go, look at this. We found 95,000 illegal votes. We think naively, that our elected officials, our law enforcement agency will go, holy crap, that shouldn't allow. Let's look at everything. But here's how the law's written. See, the key is your particular candidate lost the election with 100,000 votes. Now, you and I found 95,000. It means we're 5,000 short. The rules of the game is we better walk in with 110,000 bad ones on our own. Or what? Well, you haven't found enough to make a material difference in the outcome of the election, and they're not required to look at it by law. That is how bad these laws are written. It is so upside down and ridiculous, it makes you want to puke when you find it out.
Right. And also the whole business about this upstate New York, this Homeland Security apparatus, is that each county, when they sign on to this so-called security, they agree to a non-disclosure clause in that they're not allowed to look at the data that's gathered by this group.
That's right.
It's completely unavailable to them. So they don't even know. They've basically lost control of their election. And that, you know, we're kind of reaching toward the end here. So I want to just again say that this whole thing was done in broad daylight. Everybody knows what happened, even whether they want to admit it or not. And some people don't care. They're happy it happened because they've been, I don't want to use the word brainwashed, but they're like, you know, this deranged and irrational hatred and frenzied hatred of Trump.
Right.
It did cause people, and I know people like this, you do too, who became so, you know, unhinged. Does anybody doubt that those people might have taken measures to steal, help steal the election? You know, like the lady with the blonde braids in the in Atlanta, who was filmed stuffing the ballot box over and over again. Mm-hmm. People, they were everywhere.
What do we have? 115,000 precincts in the United States of America. And if you just have one bad person in a precinct, one, I ask you a simple question. I bet that I could hand you a stack of 200 ballots and I could tell you, just take this blank ballot and you scan in one blank ballot every other batch. Do you think you can do that? Well, we could stand there and we could feed a batch in and we get a blank ballot in. We get a blank ballot in the system. Be very easy to do. Nobody'd notice. Now, let me expand this for you. If we had just one bad person in one precinct that got in one every 10th batch, we would actually have over a million blank ballots in the system. Now, why can a blank ballot exist in the system? The machine says nothing's here, but it doesn't kick it out. It puts it in an adjudication file. Now, what did we have as a common denominator in the United States of America in 2020 and 2022? You got a time hack, which means, hey, something's up. They need more time. Well, after the election over and closes, they can look at everybody who voted and logged in, everybody who they had on the list that's able to vote, and now they have blank ballots. They found who didn't vote and they drag it over. Mm-hmm. How do we know this occurs? I can give you one single county in the United States of America that represents 775,000 voters. That one county alone, had 100,000 blank ballots fed into its system.
And I'll bet,
this is bigger than you can imagine.
And I'll bet you it was probably in a place like Detroit or Chicago or one of the big cities. Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer, I'm kind of toward the end here. I like to keep the show at generally an hour. Yes, we're just getting started here. I hope you come back.
I will.
You know, we're not, I mean, I haven't even gotten into a whole list of things I have in the menu to talk about. And I also, in the next one, want to talk about what we can do. You know, I want to try to end things on a positive note.
Absolutely.
How we can take back our election. And by the way, it's a worldwide phenomenon. We just saw it happen in Brazil. You know, that's a whole different subject. But this is something that if we don't do something about this, we really have lost our freedom.
Well, folks, don't think I was just the bearer of bad news.
Yeah.
You can never fix what you don't know. The 2020 mess and exaggeration of Trump derangement syndrome gave us the greatest gift ever. We no longer have to wonder. We know now more than we've ever known. We actually know how to fix it. We're on the road to fixing it, but it had to break in order for us to understand it and get access. This has been a good thing.
That's encouraging. I mean, certainly we are up against an enormous international combine that is censoring us and is shutting us down, and in some cases worse. So it's not an easy time. But, generally, we should be encouraged and we should to identify evil when we see it, continue to and to tell the truth. So, Jovan, can let my listeners and viewers know where they can reach you and any information that you'd like to share?
Sure. Yeah, the easiest place to find me, I actually broadcast myself every day, two times a day, 7 a.m., 7 p.m., 7 days a week, I do this, and I do it in Central Standard Time so you can remember it, 777. Just find me at Rumble, use my whole name, rumble.com/Jovan, J-O-V-A-N, like the 70s cologne. When I sweat, I do not smell like that. Hutton, like E.F. Hutton, you should listen to what I'm saying. And Pulitzer, like Pulitzer Prize, but I'm more like the free parting gift if you hurry up and order now. So Jovan Hutton Pulitzer, /@Rumble, you can find me. You can find me every day, twice a day, 7 days a week.
Excellent. All right, Jovan, we'll do it again soon. Let's collaborate as we move forward. I want to really focus on this subject this entire year as
Get
into it. Thanks a lot. Be well. God bless you. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you very much.